Hour number three kicking off here in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. I think I've only heard Benny and the Jets maybe like seven times in my entire life, and four of them have probably been the last 2 weeks. I've doubled my Benny and the Jets intake. Maybe my Elton John intake and all, you know, just in totality in the last 2 weeks. Let's play some winners and losers of the weekend. Sam, you got your intro ready?
Mm-hmm. It's playing right now. Benny and the Jets.
Is Benny a winner and the Jets are losers, or what? Jets have always been losers.
I was going to say, the Jets always seem like losers.
All right, Bob, who won this weekend? Let's start with winners.
All right, number three. This is more kind of from my industry, but there was, it starts by saying there was a person who died, passed on, but the praise this guy got made it feel like a true winner, and that was a guy by the name of Howie Schwab at ESPN, who was basically the guy who created all the research and details and statistical stuff that ESPN ultimately became adept at. It took a long time for him to get there, but Howie was the guy who did it. He even had a TV show named Stump the Schwab.
I used to love that show.
Yeah, ran for a couple seasons. And if you happen to be on X and follow some of the top media guys in sports on Saturday when it was announced that Howie had passed away, it was amazing. I mean, all sorts of big names, you know, tipping their hat to Howie, talking about how much he impacted ESPN, how much he impacted their careers, et cetera. So, you know, we could all be so lucky to have that kind of legacy when we leave, as, you know, somebody talks about all the contributions you've made to, you know, arguably the premier and, you know, GOAT when it comes to sports television with ESPN. So rest in peace, Howie Schwab. I thought that was pretty cool, all the praise that that guy got. My wife used to work with him and said, nice guy, was everything you saw on TV. He was kind of a stats nerd and a slobby guy, but a really lovable guy and super smart. So rest in peace, Howie Schwab. Number two, dominant pro golfers. We've talked about this a little bit, and you know, from the breaking news desk, Scotty Scheffler just officially won the RBC Heritage. Lost a little of that lead, but it really didn't matter when you're leading by five strokes with four or five holes left. He still won it by three strokes comfortably. So between him, who is now, Sam, you could probably check me on this. Was that five out of six tournaments now that he's won?
Yes. Second place in his other one.
Yeah, second in the other one. Five out of the past six, and the one he didn't win, he finished second. That run, and Nelly Korda, who we were talking about earlier, won her fifth in a row on the LPGA Tour. I mean, we're seeing it's tough. It makes, we talked about this last week, for the Masters, for example, ratings in the last round of the Masters went down, and some of it's probably attributable to the heater that Scotty's on. I mean, we haven't seen this kind of dominance since vintage Tiger Woods era, and the same for Nelly Korda. You have to go all the way back to, you know, Annika Sorenstam, and then before that, Nancy Lopez, back in the late 70s. I mean, there is, like it or not, there's real rarefied air these two golfers are touching right now. It's pretty impressive. And then my top winner, it's Taylor Swift. I mean, I know her album's released on Friday morning, but the buzz really carried into the weekend. And I guess say what you want. I've listened to some of it. There's been some, you know, mixed reviews on Tortured Poets Department. But the fact that she released it in two waves, I mean, it's just, as usual, kind of like marketing and buzz genius on her part. All I could hear, you know, I was in social settings this weekend and people are talking about the references in the songs, you know, whether it's about Charlie Puth or Post Malone doing a collab with her, Florence and the Machine doing a collab with her. It's just, and it was the most streamed album of all time, and that happened in one day. So just, I continue to be amazed by the savvy, and it's not just necessarily her, it's a team that surrounds her. I mean, they continue to just hit it out of the park that way. Just super impressed. I still have to listen to more of the album. My wife, she's kind of got mixed reviews on it too, but Just pretty impressive showing out of the gates for the latest from Taylor.
Okay. Did you dissect the lyrics about the Kim Kardashian?
No,
I
know she had a mention of her, but I haven't heard that one yet.
I listened to it. I wouldn't have ever thought that was about Kim Kardashian, but everyone's telling me it's about her. So I know the title has, you know, K-I-M capitalized in it, so I guess that's what she's going for. But
the Charlie Puth one, I've turned out just to be a fan of his by listening to the interview he did a while back on Howard Stern. Just really, really impressed, like how adept he is as a producer and everything else. And it, I don't know if that's her trying to tee up doing some sort of collaboration with him or what, but you know, even Charlie was saying on social media, I heard my name came up on this song. I didn't even know, you know, it was like,
so. Yeah, she basically says he should be a bigger artist, right?
Yeah.
Like it's, so, I mean, like his streaming will go up. So, I mean, that is a pretty big deal, getting a shout out, and
yeah,
it will help with the numbers for sure, and people will probably discover him just because Queen Taylor said so. So her minions will go out and stream him. That'd be pretty cool to be him and just be,
yeah.
Oh wow, that's me. She's talking about me. Wow, this is great. My winners of the weekend, number three, I went with Christian Moore. I usually try to keep it on a national scale, but man, when you have 8 hits in 24 hours and you hit 4 home runs, including 3 in a big game, and like that's an all-American type of performance. That's a put it on my draft reel type of performance. I feel like Christian Moore made himself some money and at least like kind of stamped himself in terms of Tennessee legend with that weekend performance against the Kentucky team that we really wanted to beat. It's nice to go to Lexington and win games. I don't care what sport it is. It's nice to do that and kind of put them in their place. He's my third biggest winner of the weekend. Number two, I went with Ryan Garcia, professional boxer, 3 knockdowns, beats Devin Haney, showed up. People were wondering if he was even taking the match seriously. He's dancing during interviews. He's not paying attention. He shows up overweight and has to pay, I think, $1.5 million fine for being overweight. Didn't care.
Drinks a beer weighing in.
Yeah. Either is on the verge of like a breakdown or just completely in his element and feeling himself. But 3 knockdowns, takes down Devin Haney. You know, it's a star-making performance. He's a guy that now will be on the radar in terms of wanting to watch him and wanting to see like his lead up to his next fight and how he handles this success.
People just thought he was like a lunatic and was going crazy before the fight.
That's what I'm saying. They thought he was having a breakdown, yeah. And instead he just, you know, beat the brakes off this guy.
Said he was drinking every day of his camp.
Well, he might be on the verge of a breakdown. Like he might be someone we look back on in a year or so and be like, oh, okay. So, yeah, there were some actual stuff going on there. But star-making performance. I know I said that about Christian Moore, but I feel the same way about Ryan Garcia. And number one, my biggest winner of the weekend, I went with the world's best golfers, Scottie Scheffler and Nelly Korda. We already kind of talked about them. But, Sam, anybody we missed?
I hate to keep it on golf here, but a 15-year-old Miles Russell on the Korn Ferry Tour this weekend made the cut, finished top 20, tied for 20th this weekend, shot 14 under for the week, 68-66 to get into the weekend. He was as high as tied for fourth. Just unbelievable to see a 15-year-old go out there with grown men trying to do this for a living, and he's just out there, you know, going shot for shot with them, and really doesn't seem like the situation or the pressure was phasing him. That's just incredible as a young kid like that. And then
it has to be a little humbling for those other guys.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, they're like, God, what am I doing out here? I got a 15-year-old on my toes. And then in baseball, I had Cam Buser of the Red Sox. This was a really cool story. Back in 2017, he tore his UCL, had shoulder surgery. He broke his back when he was hit by a car. Quit baseball, retired basically. He became a carpenter, and then he realized that he could still throw the hell out of the ball. Came up, started to play in like independent baseball leagues again, but he got called up yesterday. 31 years old, made his MLB debut for the Red Sox.
All right, Bob, losers of the weekend.
Number three, got to say it. We're kind of closing the book on it, it feels like, but I'm going to say it one more time. The firm of Adu and Iwaka. I mean, how in the world did we get here? Those guys, we had such great chemistry, everything else, but NIL and playing time takes over and feels like the staff was taken for a ride a little bit last week with Jonas, and then thought maybe on Thursday we were going to, you know, open the door to get some news with Tobe, and heard nothing. And again, we've talked about it a little bit today. We talked about it with Ryan Shumpert. If I'm a betting man, I think Tobe's not coming back. So we got to move on from him. So another rest in peace for those two at this point. Number two for me is it's a shared number two, Indiana Pacers and Tyrese Halliburton. This team had so much buzz going into the playoffs, namely because Milwaukee was shorthanded with Giannis Antetokounmpo being out. A lot of people felt the Pacers could win that series. Barkley was giving them Charles was giving them the kiss of death by praising them and hyping them yesterday going into their game last night against Milwaukee. They were a 1.5-point favorite, and they got absolutely torched. And Tyrese, you know, Milwaukee put together a pretty good game plan to deny the ball from him, but it's his job to be the man. If he was a guy who, you know, is supposedly on the U.S. Olympic team and supposedly an MVP candidate down the line, he sure didn't show it in game one, and I think that set the tone for this series to be over quickly, and Milwaukee taking it. I really believe that. So a lot of optimism turns into a lot of pessimism pretty quickly for them. And number one for me would be sticking with our baseball guys, but it is good to win in Lexington. The synchronized dugout cheerleading. Man, and they've been doing that for a couple of seasons. This wasn't new. It reminds me of, and no disrespect to ladies softball, but that's what it reminded me of. It was like, I don't think I've really seen any other collegiate baseball team doing that stuff.
Did you see Tony's quotes after the video? Yes. After the game?
Yes.
People, Kentucky fans, Kentucky writers, had a real hit dog hollers moment because Tony had a quote where he says, "We're not the cheerleading team." No disrespect to them. And people are saying that was a shot at Kentucky. Did you think that was a shot at Kentucky?
I thought it was a shot at Kentucky. In the way he does it. He's pretty glib when he does that stuff. But, yeah, I thought it was.
Yeah. Yeah, watching the video, watching the context, I thought he was actually just talking about the cheerleading team. Now, it does seem a little too much of a coincidence to be completely random, but he was talking about, you know, his guys in his locker or his dugout, you know, trying to focus during the game and, like, make adjustments and, like, you know, be locked in on trying to pick up tendencies and not necessarily their job's not to be cheerleaders. It's to kind of lock in and get better, and the coaches are trying to not necessarily be cheerleaders but lock in and get better. But Kentucky definitely took that as a shot at them. But after a weekend of all of their antics, I think that would probably be – I'd say they felt a little insecure about it in general.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I just – there were so many things. Like we said, that series was definitely entertaining to watch because we came out on top and it had some great intensity. Had a lot of weirdness too if you're watching on TV. That was some of it. The announcers were some of it. It was kind of a tale of two cities. It felt like there were a couple of different vibes prevailing there. But that one really stuck with me. I was sick and tired of them seeing those guys with their water bottles, shaking them up. And, you know, when the walk-up music would come on, they'd cut to the dugout, and those guys were, you know, on the bench dancing. And I don't know. I was over it.
My losers of the weekend, number three, I went with the NHL road teams. 0-6. Couldn't get it done. Home ice, I thought, was supposed to kind of be the one thing that didn't really matter. That's what I always thought about the NHL playoffs, was that the road teams could just go in there and win. Well, they didn't this time. Number two, I went with Tesla. Bad weekend for Tesla. Elon seems to be desperate and scrambling. I think 4,000 Cybertrucks had to get recalled because the accelerators
Oh, yeah.
Faulty. He's having to cut the price on some of the current Teslas on there. They laid off 10% of their global workforce last week. It's a bad weekend for them ahead of their, you know, quarter one earnings call, I guess. Not going to be good for the old stock price, I guess.
That's why they probably, they're trying to get in front of it and say, yeah, we're making the changes we need to. We've, you know, reduction in workforce, yada, yada. Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
But to me, the number one biggest loser of the weekend, kind of already talked about it, but 0 for 8. 0 for 8, and really 0 for 10 if you go back to Friday. NBA road teams, none of them got any wins. None of them stole any games. They all find themselves to be down 1-0. Got to steal a game. Usually at least one team steals something in the first weekend. I think it was the first time since in 11 years. It was either in 11 years or since 2011 that all the home teams won. Bad. Bad weekend for the NBA road teams. Sam, anybody we missed?
I had Colorado Rockies hitting coach Hensley Mullins. He is under investigation by the U.S. Aviation Authorities, basically, FAA, as he was in the cockpit of the plane, went on like Instagram Live, I think, during this and said, I'm going to land the plane. And, you know, just a... Just not a good look for United Airlines, the Rockies, really anything here. It's obviously not the safest thing in the world to have someone go into the cockpit that isn't the pilot of the plane. And now a guy is joking about flying the plane as well. Yeah, that seemed like a loser to me. And then I had Aaron Judge as well, off to a very slow start this year. He's batting 179, 27 strikeouts through 21 games.
Got booed.
Yeah, but Juan Soto's good.
Got the old Bronx cheer, as they call it. Yeah. They were letting him have it.
Soto's living large. He was at the Knicks game on the floor, and yeah, he's
like built for that type of environment.
Yes, he is.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna switch mine. The golfers. So I'll put the golfers at 2 and Ryan Garcia at 1. Plus 425.
Plus 600, I thought.
Okay, plus 425 is what I'm seeing on the CBS article. Maybe it updated.
Yeah, I saw like 600 for his money line.
Yeah, maybe by the time – that was probably written on Friday, by the time the match actually started.
One of my buddies just randomly got like – he won like $1,000 off of Ryan Garcia this weekend.
Wish
just
that been
betting paying. On it to go to decision and Garcia to win. I was like, man.
I wish I'd been paying attention to that.
One more winner. We talked about it at the beginning of the show, but Tim Hill, Fan Run Open champion.
Oh, I had Jake Miller as one of my losers, too.
You know, it has to hurt because we put out the social media video last week where Tim called Jake the biggest loser of the weekend.
And just continues to.
And then owns him. Then owns him head-to-head in the golf tournament. That's tough. We got another announcement to make towards the end of the show. And now that the golf tournament is on, we are on to our new adventure. We'll talk about that in probably the last segment of the show, so stick around, hang out with us. It's the Morning Show on Fan Run Radio.
When it's past high noon, it's time for a vodka soda made with a vodka you actually heard of. I'm talking white.
What is that? That sounds like a banger, but I've never heard it. Anybody?
Main Skin Gossip. This is
Main Skin. Okay.
I don't know this song, to be honest with you. I like it, though.
Is it Main Skin? Is it? I don't know if it's just how it sounds. I think they're a foreign band. I don't know if it was Mane. I don't know what it is. But yeah, they got a couple. I don't really dabble too much into rock music, but every now and then I'll stumble across the playlist.
And I've heard some of their stuff. That's okay. That tracks. I like that. It's good. Good stuff.
You got the Bob stamp of approval. Sam, good job by you.
Put this into the Bob Likes It folder.
Bob Likes It folder, yeah. Bob Likes It folder. We were talking Tennessee baseball in hour one. We'll open the phone lines up if anybody wants to weigh in on that. 865-288-3131. We got Roberto on the line. Roberto, top of the morning to you.
Good morning, John. You're a best and worst of the weekend. That was one of the better segments y'all have ever done. I thought it was awesome. So good work, guys.
Thank you.
Not that you need my seal of approval. First of all, the Finn. So I think you guys are missing the point here a little bit on the Tony Vitello thing. I think it was a thinly veiled troll that was actually super clever, by the way. Okay? So he was, I think he was, that stuff Kentucky was doing in their dugout, guys. I mean, I played ball my whole life. Okay? And, like, you want chatter in the dugout. You absolutely want it. That's something that has to happen. Okay? A chatterless dugout, you show me a chatterless dugout, I'll show you a team that loses a whole lot of ball games. Okay? But what they were doing was Mickey Mouse and, like, middle school girl softball level stuff. Okay? You realize that Kentucky has 25 national championships in cheerleading, right? And if I know Tony Vitello, he knows that. And I think he was calling Kentucky a cheerleading school. How do you guys feel about that?
My initial thought is that Tennessee has plenty of antics and have over the Tony Vitello era that, like, I just don't think he would get into a stone throwing contest and kind of cheapen himself to do that. But maybe he was annoyed. I mean, Tony's fiery, and of course takes shots from time to time and is brash. But, like, I don't know. When I heard that quote, I didn't think that it was about Kentucky.
Okay, and that's fair, John. But I got to say, I think Tony – you ever hear he's the smartest guy in the room? Like, Tony Vitello is arguably the smartest baseball coach I've ever heard talk in media. And it's because the media loves him because he's really sharp and they get him. And I'm such a Vitello sheep, and it's not because he's the most handsome man in baseball, which he is. It's because the guy is just clever. He's an incredible tactician. The only thing that he struggles on is when to pull a pitcher. That's the only struggle he has, isn't it? It's so frustrating. Last night with the Kirby Cannell stuff, he was the perfect pitcher for the situation in which they brought him in the game, and then he was the perfect pitcher to leave in there, even though he gave up a couple of runs. I was fine with that. But in that ninth inning, what the hell was he doing in there? That was my question to you guys.
He was trying to get to the finish line, I think, is what Tony was praying that he could get to the finish line. And, of course, he could not get there, and Tony begrudgingly went back to the bullpen.
Had he not given up 5 earned runs already, John, by then?
Yeah, no, I mean, I understand, but, like, they had a 4-run lead. You're just trying not to have to get another arm out there. And the moment it got to where it was officially dicey, you know, when the tying run came to the plate, Tony's like, okay, time to make the move.
Do you guys think we found a closer yesterday, or would you rather have Snead in that role? I know, Sam, you're a baseball guy.
Yeah.
Where do you see that?
I think I'd still rather have Snead, but I think what you saw from Phillips is extremely, extremely, it's just, you've got to feel great about it. You know, I mean, I just think that's a guy that you can have in that back end of the bullpen where, you know, if you have a weekend like Snead just had this weekend where he wasn't on his best stuff, having a guy like Phillips where you can, you know, ask him to get in there in a high leverage situation, you're going to need that come postseason play.
You know, it's weird about Phillips. I thought he was just average, maybe slightly above mediocre early in the year. And then he got hurt. I don't know if people even knew that because he was a bullpen guy anyways, but he got hurt. And all of a sudden he's come back and he looks like a different ball player. So I wonder if he was hurt the whole time. What do you think?
That's interesting. I think definitely that could be an option. And I just think that's a kid that has so much potential. I believe he was a two-way player coming into Tennessee.
He was.
Yeah. So, I mean,
and
I just
a damn good one as well.
Right.
I mean, he can hit.
So I think you've obviously got an athlete there and, you know, the frame that he's got. I think there's so much potential, and I think this coaching staff absolutely starting to see that.
Yeah, I'm overly impressed with everything the team did this weekend, with the exception of giving away the game on Friday, which, don't kid yourself, we gave that game away. They had no business winning that game. We were better that day. Actually, it's the only day where I feel like we were actually the better ball club. I don't think we were better than them yesterday. I just think that they had a pitcher blow up. I think they were the better ball club yesterday, without a doubt. Hey. Kentucky. Go ahead, John. Sorry.
Oh, that's Bob.
No, that's me. I was just going to say, I was going to pose a question to you that we talked about a little bit earlier, and that is, if you compare this batting order, I was thinking namely top five, but if you go top to bottom and you compare it with 2022, which one do you think's better, Roberto?
Oh, it's not even close. It's this one, actually. Like complete hitting?
Yeah.
Without a doubt. 22, Evan Russell was probably, I mean, I think he was a better hitter. He's clearly a better hitter than the catchers we have, but he was not a better catcher. And Cal Starks acquitted himself well. I do think he got hurt pretty bad yesterday. I wouldn't be surprised to not see him for a couple of games. That's not a guy who whines and complains about when he gets beamed or hit with a ball or anything, and he didn't come back. I think he might have caught half an inning or the next inning, and then he was gone for the rest of the game. So, I think it's this year. I mean, you can't. This is the best top five in the lineup I've ever seen in college baseball, and I watch a lot of college baseball. And I'm prone to hyperbole, just like everybody else. But I can't name a better one. LSU last year had arguably the best offensive team in the history of college baseball, and they were not better than this team in the top five lineup. They had a better catcher, the goon with the big stash down there. Travinsky, I think is his name. But I don't know, man. It's wild. It's wild to see. Because, I mean, Curley is your six-hole hitter, and he's as good a hitter at shortstop as just about anybody in the conference.
The question will be, can the 7-8-9 come through for you when it matters?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, here's another question for you, John and Sam. Is it time for Inslee to take a back seat? I know he's your senior cat. He's kind of your captain. Him and Stark are your captains. But, like, he's been awful. He had a little streak there where he got his average up to 280 or whatever. But he has been awful this season. For him, by his standards.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
It definitely does feel like it's surprising that I think he's gotten so much run time. I mean, he's a plus defender, absolutely, but I think with what you've already got, and, you know, I think Tears is definitely transformed as a defender as well this year, and Dreiling's mm-hmm. good as well. So, I'd personally probably rather throw Dalton Bargo out there in the outfield and figure it out.
Or that, or Reese Chapman. I mean, yeah, Reese Chapman's a damn good right fielder. Mm-hmm. And isn't it wild? So we're talking about those three guys. Let's talk about Tears, Dreiling. I know you guys got to go, so I'm going to jump. But Tears, Dreiling, and Reese Chapman, because I think Reese Chapman's your new guy that's kind of emerged in the lineup that they like. Those guys are putting Dalton Bargo and Villeneuve on the bench, essentially, and Hunter Inslee, who would start – those three guys would start for almost every team in the conference. Yeah. I want y'all to understand how good a hitting lineup that is to say something like that. Every one of those guys could start for almost every team in the conference not named Arkansas and Texas A&M.
Tony's got the boys rolling. Roberto, on the way out.
Hey, have a great day, guys.
Hold on. One more on the way out. I need to know, okay. Do you still think Kentucky is a better all-around team than Tennessee?
I said it halfway through the game last night. Yes, I do, actually. Because they proved to me something yesterday that I didn't think they could do. They hit home runs yesterday. They play small ball really well, and they have better starting pitching than we do currently. However, if A.J. Russell comes back, Tennessee immediately becomes a better team. Because I think you guys said he's going to be in long relief. I actually think he's going to start when they bring him back. He may start in long relief, but they're going to need him as a starter in the tournaments to come. So I will say, in its current form, because we really only have one bona fide starter, my answer is actually yes. I think Kentucky, and I think they're very, very good, even though we took the series. But it's right there. I mean, Tennessee is absolutely and without a doubt one of the top three or four teams in the country, and I'm proud of that. Have a good day.
Appreciate it. Kentucky ain't got Christian Moore. They ain't got Blake Burke. They ain't better. And, yeah, with the Russell point, like, yeah, I do think – we said he's going to come back in long relief, but we also said, like, hey, like, he's going to have to start at some point in Hoover or in the regional or super regional or Omaha. Because, like, once you get to Omaha, it's all hands on deck, right? I mean, you just got guys out there. If you can throw four or five innings, like, hey, you're starting today. Mm-hmm. Hell, I wouldn't be surprised if Marcus Phillips had to start a game in Omaha or in Hoover at some point. Like, any of your midweek guys who get starts that show they could pitch, like, you have to rely on them from time to time.
Yeah.
I didn't want to disrupt the flow, but I kind of found myself for a moment agreeing with Roberto on, again, I told you my take on Vitello's comments about the cheerleading. I think it was a troll. I think it was a little bit of a deep cut if he was thinking it was based on the history of the Kentucky cheerleading program and their success. And I can't imagine Tony's thought that through that much. But I do, again, I thought it was a dig. So I agreed but disagreed with him on that. But I didn't feel like I was going to break the flow on actually talking ball.
I want to go on record. I think Tennessee's a much better baseball team than Kentucky.
Yeah.
At this point, or when A.J. Russell comes back regardless, like, yeah, Kentucky showed they could hit some home runs when the wind's blowing out. Like, they did a good job of hitting bombs yesterday. Okay. Just, I mean, like, they do their small ball. Like, it didn't feel like they really ran against Tennessee this weekend, right?
Not a whole lot, yeah.
And I was watching it, like, you came in thinking, like, hey, this team's just going to be a menace on the base pass. Basically, that Vanderbilt player who's always on and running around the last couple years, I thought it was just going to be a team full of that, and, like, it really wasn't. At least I didn't feel like it was when I was paying attention. I feel like I was pretty locked in all weekend.
I think the other thing that we haven't talked about, too, is I thought I heard somewhere, like, Kentucky's one of the biggest parks in the conference, too, and, I mean, our guys hit 10 or 11 home runs in that series. So this whole notion, a lot of times there's the thought that, you know, Tennessee's big boppers, but they, you know, they play in a park at Lindsey Nelson that's conducive to that. I don't think it's limited to that, and they proved it this weekend.
I think that narrative across the country is pretty much dead, right? Like, that was really about the 2022 team, mm-hmm. and it was – or maybe even the 21 team, actually. And then they got to Omaha and couldn't hit any home runs. Right, that was your first trip at Omaha. It was 21, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like that was kind of the conversation about that team. And I think it kind of ended up being, I don't want to say true, but like you didn't disprove it in Omaha. You couldn't hit the ball out. All of a sudden, those home runs were just long fly outs, and like Tennessee's offense struggled. This year, like I think Tennessee's hitting so many no doubters that like I haven't seen people talking about the ballpark being the reason Tennessee's offense is so good.
Yeah.
I feel like the argument was more just like Tennessee can only score by hitting home runs. And now it's just like you've got a lineup that has so much pop, but you've also got guys that are just like consistent, like professional hitters on this yeah. team.
Tony made sure to go out of his way over the weekend and talk about the job Elander's doing, you know, coaching these hitters. And we talked about Blake Burke earlier. You don't have to look much further than that to see that it's true.
We got to find a way to give Elander whatever amount of money he wants to keep him around here recruiting and everything that he does. He's huge at this program.
Not great at third base in terms of the runners and such, but like hitting, you don't have to worry about playing small ball when you got guys just roping doubles and hitting home runs. But yeah, no, Tony, that's a part of being a good CEO, right? Is like you delegate, but also like you throw the bones to the guys that are actually carrying you. And he always talks about Frank Anderson, the pitching staff, and Elander hitting. Like, He doesn't ever try to take credit for any of that. Like, if anything, Tony's like, hey, yeah, I kind of stink at taking pitchers. He's like, I should have trusted my gut, and it almost cost us. I left a guy in there too long.
He was like, I made a lot of weird decisions, but when you have a team that's this good, you can make, you know, they can make those decisions look good for you, basically.
Well, that's one of those things that when you win, it works. But, like, it was funny, but I also kind of felt bad for him. Like, they put him on the TV interview, like right after, like they give up all those runs in the was it the fifth inning, I guess, or fourth inning? Oh, the fourth inning when they gave up the five runs to make it 5-2, they put him on there and he's having to be like, you know, I should have trusted my gut, left my guy in there a little too long. Meanwhile, Tennessee like gets the leadoff guy on, then hits into a double play and like the inning's over and he's just fuming, saying you did some quirky things, some weird things works whenever you win. If you had lost and you're like, ah, yeah, you know, I did some weird things. It's like, no, not weird things. Bad things, Tony. You did some bad things. You still haven't figured out the pitching stuff, huh? And if Kirby had blown that save, or if he brought Phillips in a bad spot and he gave up a two-run bomb to tie it and you blew a four-run lead, you're probably like, man, what the hell are you doing there too? But when you win, guess what? No one complains. When you win, you get to be the quirky, smart, fun guy. Do we think Vitello has a leg to stand on, Bob? Like you said, because you think it's a shot. You're on the side of it being a shot. Yes. Like when you have the daddy hat and the fur coat and you're doing all those things, like if you're Tennessee, can you take a shot at anybody's antics in the dugout? That's why I think Tony has too much self-awareness to be like, I'm going to troll a Kentucky team for cheering on their guys. When we know like our program we are pretty antic driven, or we have been for a long time.
I feel like they're less antic driven than they were in like 22, for example.
Sure, but I think it's more so because we got in trouble, not because Tony's like mentality changed. It's more like we can't do anything without getting warnings. Like Christian Moore got a warning just for looking at the Kentucky dugout. Like,
I think he's fully aware of what his own team does, but I think I just couldn't help but think he was like, we came into your park, we took your lunch money, and you guys act however you want to behave, but I really think that was inconsequential to him what his team does.
To me, it feels like Tony is like, I don't think he cares about the antics when it's like, you know, after a home run. To me, it's like, you know, you're celebrating with the team after scoring a touchdown in football, but what Kentucky's doing is like the equivalent of like a team celebration after a 1 yard loss on first down or something.
Right.
Like that.
And the other thing I would, I agree with that. And the other thing I would say is
7 yard gain on first down. Because they're celebrating like getting on base. At least it's like a 7 yard gain, not a 1 yard loss.
Remember when, I forget who the batter was on Kentucky, they got hit by the pitch and Cal Stark was kind of questioning it. And the guy got hit by the pitch and he like did a flex and, you know, looked at his dugout. And I mean, it was like, you got hit by a pitch, man. That's not a skill thing.
The whole
at all.
Pound on the chest after you've got like, what was it, a full count, or you're on like you got two strikes against you or something like that. It's like, oh, I'm playing for my team. It's like, how about you just lock in and not strike out?
You guys sound like all the people that hated on Tennessee too. Like, the bat flips, act like you've been there before. Now you're putting on a pimp.
No,
it's college baseball. It's supposed to be the fun sport. Like, I got no problem with the guy flexing. I got hit by a pitch. It doesn't bother me. I'm so tough. Like, come on.
I think it's like the mid at bat stuff that gets me going. I'm perfectly fine for after you hit a home run or after, you know, you get a big play, you want to have a fun celebration. I'm all for it. But like,
if Tony was the fun police, I don't want to say think of him less because he could do no wrong other than leave his pitchers in too long. And still think back to the Chase Burns against Notre Dame thing. So he can do a little wrong, I guess. But like, and as far as Cal Stark goes, do we think that was him getting pulled for an injury? Because I thought it was like, hey, we're putting Peebles in. We're going to let Peebles catch because we brought him in to hit, and you don't want to, like, get into the business of bringing in your backup catcher just to pinch hit without actually putting him in. So, like, maybe he got a little dinged up, but, like, I didn't think of him as, like, an injury. I thought that was, like, hey, we're putting Peebles in. We're doing a double switch type of thing.
I took it as an injury, but I didn't take it as, I don't know, Roberto characterized it. He thinks it's serious. I don't know about that. But I did think he got dinged up.
Yeah, a little dinged up, but also, like, I think Peebles' base is loaded. They wanted to kind of – again, I don't think you bring in your catcher just to
that's
pinch hit and waste him.
It's like a good opportunity to maybe try to get him on the good foot, right? To, you know, because they need him, so to speak, because, you know, got to get you in there.
I figured it was more of just, like, a little bit of the injury. Like, oh, he got hit in the wrist. Are we confident in, you know, a 80% right now, Cal Stark, or a guy in Peebles, you know, that we feel like we have some confidence in and, you know – still have confidence in him behind the dish after the hit.
Yeah, and typically you don't play a catcher three games in a row like Tony hasn't been. So, like, you know, he did with Stark, so getting a chance to do something at the end of the game. I don't know, I just didn't take that as, like, a serious injury thing. Like, yeah, sure, maybe a little sore.
I wouldn't be surprised to see him, like, not play Cal Stark up until Missouri.
But, oh, yeah, like, sure. Like, yeah, you know, I think that would happen regardless, just if somebody caught three games in a row. Like, you're going to give the other guy a chance, especially one that needs to get going against what you would assume would be some weaker pitching.
And you mentioned this earlier, John, but I'm going to mention it again because I loved it when Peebles hit that sac fly and Tears scored the run and never stopped running. Got past players trying to congratulate him. He wanted to get to Peebles and, you know, hug it out with him. I thought that was awesome.
You love that from a fan perspective. I was just thinking about how I'd feel if I was Peebles. But come on, bro. Like, don't treat me like I'm a loser that can't get a hit. Like, you're acting like, you know, that was, you're so surprised that I actually came through. Like, Phillips, that was like, hey, you know, first time ever coming through, getting a big save out of the pen in the SEC. Like, that's something you celebrate with Peebles. I'm like, I know how to hit the ball.
Is that not Peebles' first big moment in the
SEC,
though?
That's what I was going to say.
No, it is, but I mean, he was good last year.
Yeah, I mean, he was a great player last year, but I do think that confidence is huge in baseball. You know, you just got to.
And I think it's good for Tears to do. I'm just saying, if I was Peebles, like, I'd just like, come on. Like, I hit a sac fly. If I hit a grand slam, I'm like, yeah, I'm going crazy. But, like, if I'm Peebles, I'm like, oh, God, this is the point I've fallen to where they're treating me like it's a celebratory thing if I even make contact.
I was a 400 batter coming in the transfer portal, and now I'm getting a pat on the back for a sack fly.
So, yeah, like I agree with what you're saying, Bob, about tears. Like, that's what you do as a good teammate. And I'm just saying, just from, like, the athlete perspective, I'd be like, huh, I got in and out of this break without stumbling. Bob gives me a big high five. Good job. Your take last segment was bad, but this time you didn't say anything too bad.
Let's go, boy. Like, yell it at him.
But, yeah, no, like, and hopefully, like, you, I think you're right, Sam, confidence is a big thing. Like, hopefully you could follow it up, and I would imagine people starts tomorrow, and hopefully he gets a couple hits, and he can go back to maybe not being that 400 hitter, but just not an automatic out.
A bat you can rely on, yeah.
Yeah, not an automatic out. At least he can, like, maybe be up there and give you good at-bats. We talked a lot of baseball. Going to talk a little bit more. Got an announcement here at the station coming up. We'll dive into that after the break. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.
Ever been the coach who realized the team care about your hot-blooded sister? I'm sure there's a man for to
love her and miss her. I didn't mean nothing. I've talked a lot of baseball. Tennessee with a big series win. The polls come out yet? Yeah, they usually come out around lunch, right?
Yeah, I don't think it's out quite yet.
Do we think we move at all? I guess we'll probably at least, at the very least, switch places with Kentucky, right? We'll go at least to number three, I'd say.
I'd be pretty mad if we didn't.
Yeah. And surely nobody jumps you with you winning on the road. So I'd say we'll settle in kind of as the number three team in the country. Looking forward to the Missouri series this weekend. Expectations there are going to be brooms out. But we've talked a lot of baseball. We talked some golf at the beginning. The Fan Run Open. I'm calling it a success.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Definitely.
Scale of 1 to 10, Sam, what are you giving it?
I had a great time. I thought that was like a 9 out of 10.
Okay. Bob?
I'd give it a 9 only because of the weather, the way it started.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went 8.5. The weather knocking out a couple of the teams. I felt bad. We had William and Jace from overtime out there on the closest to the pin competition, but like the way we shotgun started it, and like we were a couple teams short, like they had to sit there by themselves for like an hour waiting on teams to get back to two. So I kind of felt bad for them, and they were right at this part where people kept wrecking too. I felt bad for them because Bear comes down and wrecks, runs off the road, and then just makes Jace get out to push the cart, and then gets in Jace's cart and just drives that one off. But, because Bear couldn't get his out. He's like, I'm just going to take this one instead.
But then when you talk to William and Jace afterwards, I said, is that cart still down there? They said, no, man, we just turned it off and started it again, and it was fine.
Tucker and I had to tell Bear that there was a reverse feature.
I know. I saw that too.
You had to tell who?
Bear.
Yeah. Yeah. It was
or Marshall.
There was a learning curve on the cart, clearly.
I give it a solid 8.5. The weather knocked us off. The weather keeps it from being a perfect 10. Mm-hmm. I had a great time.
Yeah.
It was a fantastic time. And that was event number one of the year, kind of down, at least in terms of the big station events. Event number two coming up at the end of May, May 30th. Fan Run Night at Smokies Stadium.
Yeah, we've been working on this one for a little while. We want to make sure that we have great relationships with the local sports entities around town. Ice Bears is one. Smokies is another. Talking with One Knox for soccer. But the Smokies, it's their 25th year and likely their last at Smokies Stadium. And we want to be there to partner with them on a great 25-year run. And so we're going to be partnering with them all summer long. Talking, you know, having appearances leading up to homestands and other things. But, yeah, we're super excited to be able to have Fan Run Night on the 30th. The folks at Tennessee Smokies are absolutely jacked up about it as well. So we're very excited, and it's a great way to kick off summer is the way I look at it. It's kind of that unofficial start to summer. School will be just getting out before then, and before people start heading out for all their vacations, too. We're going to get people together and celebrate some baseball and get to hang with you all again like we did at the golf tournament.
Save the date, May 30th, not April 30th, not 8 days from now. May 30th, the Thursday, Thirsty Thursday, I think, that's right before the Tennessee Regional. Exactly. So it should be a big baseball weekend. Tennessee, unless something goes horribly wrong, should be hosting a regional on Friday. and we'll do a Smokies night, fan run night. I'm angling for the first pitch. I don't know if you guys are aware. I've called dibs like 20 times. So
I need to see you.
Yeah,
this first pitch. I can't wait for this.
There's a lot of conversation happening there. We're talking with the Smokies tomorrow. We'll let you know how it goes.
Well, I've let you know my request, and
yes, we know.
I don't want to go out. I don't want to go out and completely say I'm not coming if that request is not honored. I don't know if I'm willing to go there and hold out yet, but I'm not saying that, Bob.
I know. Noted. We will keep that in mind.
I'm not saying that. The Chattanooga Lookouts will be in town that night, so a little Tennessee rivalry. And Thirsty Thursday, $3 beers. Members of the 37 Club, you get free tickets. We're working on figuring out which section we'll be in and all that. There'll be more details to come, obviously, over the next month and a half. But, yeah, go ahead and save the date, May 30th, Thursday. We're going to have a fun night out at the park. And you listen here, Mother Nature.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding.
You bothered me on Saturday morning. You just trolled me a little bit after being pretty all week. Messing my allergies up all week with all the pollen, all the sunshine. You rained on me on Saturday morning just to then become beautiful immediately after the tournament ended. You listen here, May 30th, you better be a nice lady, Mother Nature. No rain on the 30th. Thirsty Thursday, $3 beers. I'm sure there'll be some hot dogs. Maybe the fan run quartet sing some Take Me Out to the Ball Game or something. I don't know. We're working on getting some singers out there too.
Could be some in-game activities. We'll be keeping you up to date over the coming weeks, but we wanted to make sure you get it out there and get it on the calendar. It's coming quick.
And cash prize out of Sam's pocket if anybody can beat him, like the Freeze. We're going to put him in the outfield from pole to pole. And
I actually will do that.
You have to race Sam. He's not going to give you a head start, but you have to race
money,
Sam.
But yeah, you can race me.
I smell a matchup with Jake Miller on that, too. Let's get Jake out there.
Okay. I can be down for that.
Speaking of Jake Miller, the G.I. Jake Show coming up next. No Jake Miller today, so it's the G.I. Jake Show without G.I. Jake, but we'll see how Brett, Marcus, and intern Jack do it. Stay locked in on Fan Run Radio.